Running your own business can feel isolating, but you don't have to figure it all out alone. Join a free guest session inside the Smashing the Plateau community to get fresh ideas and real solutions to your biggest business challenge. Spots are limited. Reserve yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.
It was aha for me, right? I had to do a lot of inner work. And like I said, when you own the company, it's your own little baby. It's really, really hard to let go of some things.
Today's guest is Camille Miller. After nearly two decades leading nonprofits, including a $3 million grant-funded role that suddenly disappeared, Camille made a bold decision, bet on herself. What started as a simple coffee club has grown into a global movement. And in this episode, she gets candid about what that journey really looked like. From hiring the wrong people to learning how to stop doing and start leading, Camille shares the hard-won lessons of building something that was never meant to be about her. If you're navigating the tension between running your business and letting it grow beyond you, you won't want to miss this one. What does it really mean to build something that outlasts you? How do you lead a mission-driven organization when the old rules of business no longer apply? And what happens when the very model you've created has no blueprint to follow? Now let's welcome Camille Miller. Camille is the founder and visionary behind the Soul Professional Movement, a global initiative redefining success for purpose-driven professionals. She has built an international community spanning six continents and over 48 countries, bringing together leaders and visionaries committed to aligning their work with who they truly are. A three-time Amazon best-selling author, Camille's work explores the intersection of purpose, business, and leadership. Through her writing, speaking, and community building, she is leading a new conversation around authentic success. Her mission is simple: to help others bring their gifts to the world and create a lasting impact. Camille, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today.
A pleasure. So you've been operating independently for over a decade.
Yes. Can
you start off by just sharing a little bit about your career journey?
So my background has always been in not-for-profit management. So that's where that all came from. I've worked through hospitals and schools, but the position I had right before I created this company was a CEO of an organic farming association that was throughout the Northeast. And it was in that job that I saw people that were like living two lives, and I was as well. So it was easy to recognize, right? So like I was acting like a professional during the day, but then I went home and I was much more spiritual, much more into alternative medicine, ate organic food, and I had this other life. And I felt like my professional life didn't allow my soulful life to come together. So it was in that world that I started to recognize all of these other people that were just like me. And that's what brought me into starting this community of just, you know, originally it started as a coffee club, but it was supposed to be more of a professional organization of like the American Medical Association or the Bar Association, like a safe place for people come and build credibility, even though they had soulful jobs. You know, it's morphed a little bit since then, but it's still the essence of what it's always been.
Did you start the community while you were still working full time?
No, my job was defunded in 2015, and I was almost 50 years old, and I realized in that moment that I might only have a short span if I relied on other people, and in the nonprofit world, you're always relying on grants. This was a very big grant, a $3 million grant that paid my salary and all the programs that I was running. So when it was defunded, I was like, well, I think I should start to bet on myself here, you know, because as I get older, I don't know what I'm going to find. And nonprofits are tending to merge and all of these other things. So there's less jobs, there's younger people that'll work for less money. So that's when I decided, okay, let me start to build the community that I actually need in the world and what I would like to see in the world. And I should say at that point, money was no longer my motivator either. It was really the quality of life, because I had been doing all this very passionate work about food and farming and what was in our, you know, I worked in Washington on our organic label and I lobbied and I loved it. And I felt like I was doing meaningful work. So to then go work for like a hospital or a school, or even though I'd make good money, it didn't have that same passion. So I was like, I got to do something that just lights me up from now on.
Had you ever run your own business before?
So I owned a couple businesses before. I owned a real estate firm that we did a lot of investments. I owned that for probably, I forget if it was 10 or 12 years. So I did do that. I did a lot of independent contractor work, did strategy work. I did teaching and sales training for different companies, you know, and I had gone back into consulting strategy, I should say, mostly for nonprofits. So part of what I did was strategy work for nonprofits, large nonprofits, or taking the boards, doing 5-year strategy plans as a consultant on the side. So not when I was a CEO, but that's how I ended up with that CEO job, because that's what I was doing. And then they asked if I would consider being a CEO. So that's how I got that job. So I was kind of going back to that. And I was like, well, as I do this strategy work, let me work on this other thing too. So yes.
Yeah. So starting the community as a business was probably not as much a leap of faith as it might have been for someone who had never run a business before.
Yeah. And I had run membership-based communities before in the not-for-profit world. So yeah. So it wasn't that much of a leap. I knew how to set it up. I knew what it looked like. I knew what I wanted, all of it. So, yeah. And yeah.
Were there differences between running it as a for-profit entity versus running it in the context of a nonprofit organization, it being the being a community?
Yeah. So not really, certainly not in the beginning. I'll put it that way. Certainly not in the beginning, because I ran it as a membership organization and we were kind of a coffee club. So it was very small. The price to enter wasn't that big. It was actually as we grew. And then I was like, what am I creating here? And as I grew as a person and the organization grew, I mean, we started as a coffee club. And in 2018, we went to a Zoom model. So we were way ahead of the curve. And then in 2019, we went international. But in 2020, you might remember this global pandemic. And we almost imploded because everyone started rushing in. And then I'm like, what am I doing now? Right. So every few years from that point on, I kept going, okay. And now we're so large. I'm also going back and forth with that. Do we have this nonprofit arm that can start doing grant work and other work? But our idea is to make it free. And it was a paid community for 10 years. We did have a free arm, but most of our revenue was based in free. I'm sorry, in the paid membership. And it was really on my back as a teacher and a facilitator. Like I was doing all of the programs and it was never meant to be around me. It was meant to be what I left in the world. So the biggest difference now, and I felt it from like 23 to now, was realizing that this isn't really my company. Even though I created it in the world, it's not like my coaching company. It's not mine. It's what I'm leaving to the world and I have to start to lead and stop doing. It's not meant to be around me and my name. It's just what I'm facilitating with other masters and co-creating with other people around the world.
Yeah, that's a perspective that many people have a really hard time pulling off.
Yeah, it's hard.
Making something that you've built, everybody looks to you.
Yes.
It's really easy to feed your ego with that stuff.
Yes, it is. It was never meant to be, but I knew that I've been the one funding it personally. Right. And I reached a point where I was like, okay, I'm ready to move on to whatever my next chapter is in the world. So how do I make this self-sustaining? And having that talk with myself, you know, me and my board, which is me, and going, okay, like if you were a CEO and you didn't own this company, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. So let's start leading again. Like, let's start being the CEO that people hire you for, not this like crazy entrepreneur that's running around doing everything. So that was hard.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a hard transition to.
It's a very hard transition
to manage.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is.
So fast forward to today, what is the community like? And how have you structured it as the CEO?
Yeah. So now, I think, like we said in the opening, we span 6 continents, 48 countries. And that's what we know of people that have declared their country because they don't have to when they sign up for something. We went to a free community platform in 2024 and dropped the paid because the idea was always to help everyone bring their gifts to the world, not just the people that can pay for it. So that had to change a little bit and structure differently. And there was a call not too long ago, maybe what month is this? Maybe like 6 months ago, I actually told the community if it doesn't, not as a threatening way, just like, if it's not supposed to be, it's not going to be, but I'm not covering it anymore. So it's either going to be self-sustaining or it's not going to be in the world. And a lot of people rose up. And now we are bringing back our in-person meetings from, we stopped them in like really the end of 2019, but definitely by 2020 when the pandemic hit. And we have ambassadors all over the world that are doing local on the ground work now that are holding meetings. That's all voluntary. I'm doing partnerships and sponsorships with other masters. So it's not everyone, it's very hand selected who can teach in our community, who could be a part of the community that way. And we do have what we call preferred partners that give a percentage back if they sell into our community, kind of like an affiliate program, but it's not easy to get into. So that pays back. And we opened up a donation system where we do have people just naturally donating into the system. It is not tax deductible at this moment because we are not a 501c3, but the money does go into the operations of the business itself. So it's proven to be very successful and we keep growing. Like I field calls now not to sell anything, but it's more of people, how can I get involved? How can I help? How can I donate my time? You know, I'd like to be a preferred partner. How can I get in front of your community and give back? So the conversations are much different and I have to remind myself, okay, you're not doing it anymore. Right. I can find the partners and I have the conversations, but it's a much different way when you're the leader.
Yeah. Very different.
Much different conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. So who's your typical member?
We say very logically brained, but soul led. So many of our people were in very structured environments, very logically brained. So engineers, doctors, lawyers, CPAs, lots of teachers, therapists, people that were in structure. And just went, I'm not doing it anymore, or this isn't why I did this, right? I did it to help people, but they ended up working for someone else or some corporation, and it did not go the way, I would say, it doesn't make their heart sing any longer. So as they get older, usually in midlife, but our people are getting younger and younger now. Now we have 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds joining, where it used to be, I'd say, 48 to 62, where people started to be what I call awakened. Mm-hmm. So it's the logically brained but soul led. They're at a point in their life where like, I've made the money, I've done the thing. It's no longer my motivator. I really want to leave an impact in the world. I really want to be a creator of something else. And I call them the seekers. Sometimes they know exactly what they want to do. Sometimes they have no idea what is even possible. So a big part of my personal work was designing businesses and helping people as a thought leader. Of coming in and going, okay, this is how we create it, because we've been taught that business isn't done that way, right? So we say a soul professional, which is our brand, is someone who lives in a higher vibration, has an alternative approach to business, and is here to help repair the world. So we have a lot of people just coming in going, I don't know where I belong, but I'm attracted to this group, so let's see what happens. And that's what we invite in. So the conversation starts.
Yeah. So Camille, it sounds like a really kind of interesting hybrid entity that you have built based on your unique background and experience, mm-hmm. That you have now developed and navigating the transformation so that it can run without you, which is quite remarkable. I'm wondering also along the way, what kind of surprises you may have faced where you realized there was a gap that you needed to fill, either something you needed to learn.
A lot.
Or maybe some expertise that you had to figure out how to find and tap into.
Yeah. So many learning, so much learning, because when you work for someone else or even in a structured environment, when you know this is the structure and we're just doing it this way, it was even different. Like when I owned my real estate company, even consulting, you're hired to do something, right? So I knew exactly what I was doing. This I had no blueprint for. So I wasn't really sure what I was creating. And as I grew and the community grew, I was like, okay, this doesn't work anymore. So it was even from like the little things in the beginning that like nothing was automated, right? Just getting automated. And as I brought people in to making sure that they were the right people, which honestly, I did well when I worked for other people. But in my own company, I did a terrible job hiring. I really did. I did a terrible job hiring. And I had to learn that, you know, I'm the visionary. I'm the one holding the vision. And it's my responsibility to translate that vision to the people that work for me to make sure that they're holding that same vision. We're not going in different patterns, right? That was hard. I hired the wrong people, lost a lot of money because I hired some big executives thinking that I would have this amazing number two because I really never wanted to be in the limelight. And I've hired a number of operations directors over my time, a great number. I learned over time that I really didn't have to hire the executive if I hired a really good admin or coordinator or someone who was really thoughtful and precise because I can hold a vision, but I don't like to do all the little detailed work. So I learned that I really need to hire my opposite, not my same. That was a big learning. That cost me a lot of money, a lot of times.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Right? So I was like, oh, here's someone just like me. No, our heads are both in the clouds. That doesn't work. No one's actually doing the work, right? I've learned a lot about people along the way. And I know now as I grow, the community around me grows, right? So in the beginning, it was a lot of struggling entrepreneurs because I was struggling, right? I was trying to figure it out. And that's what I attracted, all the people trying to figure it out, right? So as I grew, my community also grew. But I figured that out probably within 2 or 3 years, like, oh, they're following me. I get it. I'm always one step ahead. So I kind of knew what they needed when I saw that. So big things like that. It was aha for me, right? I had to do a lot of inner work. And like I said, when you own the company, it's your own little baby. It's really, really hard to let go of some things. I like to figure things out and then hand the process over. It's very difficult in a company that's also all online, which that is my first, right? I'm used to, before this anyway, now it's been this way for years, but I'm used to being in an office, right? I was used to talking to people, seeing when they show up, do things. And now I'm running a 24-hour company with staff all over the world that runs at different times, right? And it used to drive me crazy. You know, 10, 11 o'clock at night, I'm getting questions and I'm like, I don't want to deal with this, but it's their morning, right? So I have to deal with this. Or how do I set this up better so I'm not bothered at night, right? And getting some better systems. So that's a huge learning curve. An online business with others is a huge, huge learning curve.
Yeah, very different than an in-person business.
Yeah.
In one time zone.
Yeah. And now, yeah, all the continents is really, this year is a real growth year for us because we're doing the in-person and we're also almost doubling our programming because of time zones.
Wow.
Yeah. And remember, I was just going to say, remember, it's all free. We don't make revenue on this. We make back revenue on, you know, either sponsors or, you know, affiliates or something else. So it's always like, how are we producing revenue now that we're doubling our programming?
Right. Yeah. Which is a different model than a lot of
very
businesses
different
have.
Model. Right. And the funnel's not for me. It's not like I'm not selling them. Right. A lot of communities, there's one single coach that's selling something, right? That's not what this is. This is set up legitimately like a not-for-profit. I could just switch it over to a nonprofit because it's run exactly like one.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that, do you think that there are corollaries in the business world where businesses would perhaps be more successful if they had some elements where they thought or acted like a nonprofit?
Going forward, absolutely. I think that's what's being lost in the world. I think that's also what's falling in the world right now. The things that aren't working is because it's based on greed, which was our way of life, right? That's what when I went for my MBA, that's what we were taught, right? It was really based on corporate greed, but there's been a paradigm shift and now it's more about humanity and heart-centered and globalization. That's what we're going to. So yeah, I think if corporations, which are now, they say like socially responsible or, you know, social impact organizations, that's what we call ourselves, where our first bottom line is about the impact we are making in the world. And our second bottom line is, are we making enough profit to continue this? It's really about
the input. It's a very different way of thinking.
We call it a double bottom line, right? If you're making the money, but not the impact, then we aren't doing our mission in the world. That doesn't help us, right? But, you know, we did have years where I was funding it. We were making impact, but no income. And I was funding it. I was like, well, that's not helping anyone either. How do I leave this to the world? No one's going to want it. Right? So, yeah. Yeah. So it's different. But I definitely believe that the future is about social impact. And it's about more of a global, humanistic look at the way we're doing life.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, the reason why there are 8 or more billion humans in the world is because we are social creatures and we have figured out how we can do more by collaborating and do better by collaborating.
Absolutely.
So, right. So the pure greed model doesn't really help us long term.
No. And that's really what's collapsing, right? When you have billion-dollar healthcare companies and they're, you know, paying people $12 an hour at the front line, right? That's what's collapsing. People are going, no, I'm not doing it anymore. Right. Or you have, you know, big ones like Walmart and Target that pay nothing in the front line, but all of those people are on the welfare system or on SNAP benefits or because they're working full time. They're contributing to society and they can't make it.
And usually often more than full time.
Yeah. And they can't make it because the corporate greed is because they have to make more money. Right. And that model's collapsing. We're seeing it all over the place. People, you know, voting with their dollars, right? They're just like, I'm just not going to buy here anymore. Or, I'm just not going to do this anymore. And I think the younger generation, like the kids that are in their 20s, right? That whole are going, I'm just not doing it. They're not taking the jobs that we took because it's not payable. Like I have 3 kids in their 20s that are all college educated, make less than I did in my 20s. That is wild to me. That is why I was like, how is that possible? Like their education costs $100,000, right? And I was like, that is crazy. They're making less than I did 30 years ago. That makes no sense to me. So it's collapsing, but it has to collapse and it's going to hurt. It's really going to hurt, but it has to collapse so this new model can be made and it will be made. I think a lot quicker than we think.
The last question I wanted to ask you is about you and your community, not the community you run, but as the CEO, it can be a very lonely job.
Yes.
And, you know, this is true whether you're a solopreneur or you run a big organization. How do you tap into the wisdom of thinking partners in a safe environment so that you can be helped in making the whatever challenging decisions you need to make for your own business?
Yeah. So about, I would say 2 or 3 years ago, I started like my own accountability partners, like CEOs that are also creating in the world or understood what I was creating, that we can meet usually once a month and just talk about like, how are we? What are we doing? Where are we stuck? So I have what I call a triad that we meet, you know, in the first week of every month, just to go over our goals. We set our goals for the next month and we do that. For the last 2 years, I've actually had a friend that I talk about wins with every single night. I text my wins, you know, just to stay in a good mindset. But I'm also in this space of looking at people that have done it and are higher than I am, which I will tell you is hard because I'm doing something that no one's doing.
I was going to say it's probably hard. You know, I know really a lot about different kinds of communities, and I don't know of one like yours.
Yeah. I have grown out of a number, and I do help other people that are making communities in the world. Like, they call me for advice, which I'm happy to give, but I'm at that space now of, wow, I'm really growing and I would love to talk to somebody, but I'm not sure. There's probably a lot of systems and stuff, but it's based on a different model than what I'm doing. Yeah. Like, I had a venture capitalist that actually called me because about a year ago, I was deciding what direction am I going in right now as I offload this. And I had a couple investors call and be like, you know, we need this. Can you bring the membership back and bring? And I was like, I could, but that's not our model anymore. It's like, we can. And then I realized, well, I can't go that route because the investors are looking for something else, right? That could down the line happen in a different way, but not the way that's traditionally done. Yeah. So when you're creating a different model, it's really hard to find people that think like you do.
Yeah,
it just is. It's hard. It is. It's a little lonely not to bounce ideas, but AI has actually helped a lot.
Good to know. Well, yeah. Camille, thank you so much for coming on and talking about what you've been doing. It's really fascinating. And I think our audience will gain a lot from this conversation.
Awesome.
Is there anything else you want to share before I ask you how people can learn more about the community and find out whatever resources you have?
No, just, you know, if it resonates with anyone, to come find us. We're free.
What's the best place for them to go?
The best place to do that is our website is soulsoulprofessional.com. And you can learn about the movement itself. We have a full pledge and movement out there. Our, you know, free workshops, our gatherings in person and online. We have, you know, healing clubs and souls and prayer circles and all sorts of stuff.
Great. Well, Camille, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and share your story and some great insights. My guest today has been the founder of the Soul Professional Movement, Camille Miller. Thank you, Camille, for joining us.
Thank you.
Running your own business can feel isolating. That's why we created Smash Through Your Business Roadblocks, a live interactive session where experienced professionals bring real challenges and work through them together using the Smash framework. It's your chance to experience the Smashing the Plateau community, a space where corporate refugees support one another to keep moving forward. You'll leave with fresh momentum, clarity, and maybe even a few new allies in your corner. Guest spots are limited, so grab yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.